You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith, and today I'm talking to Catherine Cohen in a conversation recorded a couple of weeks ago. So we're in lockdown, as you hear. She's going a bit crazy in lockdown, but within her own parameters, I think it's fair to say. And she is a phenomenal comic. She waltzed off with the Best Newcomer Comedy Award at the Edinburgh Festival last year with a show that was one of those shows. In the first 2 minutes, you settle down in your seat and think, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. And she managed to keep that pace up incredibly, bursting with ideas, really funny, an amazing singing voice, and also, as we will discuss, a propensity for getting into a song, smashing out loads of punchlines, not repeating herself and then getting out, not repeating punchlines and then getting out. I urge you to check out her stuff. She has got some bits and bobs online. Of course, you should go and see her live when live gigs are a thing again, but follow her socials at Kat Cohen on Twitter, at Kat C. Cohen on Instagram, and if you are not familiar with her, you're just going to love her work. I think she's fantastic. I shall talk to you in the middle and at the end. This is Catherine Cohen. Hey, how are you doing? Nice to meet you.
I'm doing okay.
we should briefly cover, because this is a pandemic-ridden episode, where are you and how are you isolating and how are you coping with it all before we get on to the much more frothy and fun business of your comedy?
I'm in hell. I mean, I'm in heaven, but I am so fucking ready for this to be over. I feel so absolutely crazy. I've hit a wall. This is, I believe, day 67 in quarantine. I'm very lucky to be with my boyfriend in his very nice cabin in the Berkshires of Massachusetts. So I'm very lucky to be in the countryside. I'm a little princess. I have a perfect life. And yet here I am complaining. I'm just so extroverted and I need to be around people. And I'm just like so sick of like just only being able to be at my computer. I mean, what about you? Where are you?
I'm in Bristol in the UK and I have two children.
You have two children? Oh my God.
Yes, little ones. So I'm not worried about their missing their education. And actually, they're both young enough. They're 1.5 and 4.
Okay.
And they are kind of young enough that they're not, I don't think, suffering any big psychological implications of not having seen their friends. We worry about that more than it's an issue, the more than I think it's actually an issue. But it's nuts. And I mean, the thing about the pandemic is the extraordinarily different ways in which almost everyone I know is in just this hugely different situation. I know comics who've quit comedy or temporarily and got proper jobs delivering stuff to survive. I know some people who have no children and are just like, oh, I'm just going to make funny videos and hang out and try not to go mad. And then, you know, somewhere in the middle I am. I'm very happy and lucky and being really busy online. And but it's nuts. There's a little yammering kind of, oh, fuck it, world's on fire.
I know.
Kind of feeling.
That must be so intense having kids. Here I am complaining and the only person I have to take care of is myself. And that's hard enough, honey, am I right?
Yeah.
what's Bristol all about? Where is that?
It's in the southwest of the UK. Have you been to the UK?
Yes.
It's 100 miles west of London.
Okay. What's the vibe there?
It's where Banksy's from.
Okay. Banksy. Cool.
So the vibe is very I think it really fancies itself as a kind of Like, have you been to Hackney in the UK?
Yeah.
In London. So Hackney has that kind of like, oh, this is where all the cool artists are because this is where the, you know, the big buildings were that the artist moved into and now it's all gentrified. It's a bit like that. It's not exactly like that. And I'm very conscious now of people from Bristol listening to this and going, what the fuck are you talking about? And I moved here under duress in order to have children.
Right, of course.
And now I'm incredibly glad that we have access to so much countryside.
Totally. That's great. Well, good.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. So, listen, are you in a fit state? I'm suggesting we pause unless you'd want to, but just talking about your work, how are you feeling about your work during the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling really bummed. I just haven't had more than, like, you know, 2 weeks away from live performance, you know, in years. And I had so much great stuff planned. And I was actually in London when this all went down and I had to like cancel. I was doing a run of shows there and I had to like, after the first show, I went back to my hotel and my parents called me and were like, you need to come home. And I flew home and had to cancel the shows because Trump had made that announcement. And then I was supposed to go to the Melbourne Comedy Festival this year as well. Man. And I was going to go back to Edinburgh and do like a work in progress thing and and a reprise of my show from last year. So, you know, it's a bummer. But I am, you know, trying to write some new songs. That's the main thing I've been able to write. Haven't been really writing jokes. I've been doing my show every week on Instagram live at 8 on Wednesdays, 8 New York time. And that's been really good. And yeah, I'm publishing a book of poetry early next year. So I was writing, kind of finishing that up. So there's definitely stuff to work on, but I just miss like the crowd.
Because you are, I mean, I saw your show in Edinburgh last year and it was phenomenal.
Oh, thank you.
You had a blazing debut year and I can appreciate why it's so frustrating to have got there. You won newcomer and, you know, awards are a thing and that's certainly...
crazy. They're definitely a thing. Yeah, there's nothing like it in the States. Like no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
And it's so...
Yeah, yeah.
but yeah, it was the best time ever.
It was, that show is the density of the jokes in that show. I could not believe you sustained it. Do you know what I mean? Like we sat there in the Pleasants and there's the opening number about doing comedy because you're needy and you need the attention.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not here in my words. Can you just kind of paint a picture for us for people who didn't see it, how you kind of come on and how you maintain that kind of pace?
Yeah, I don't know any other way of doing it. I just, the show is basically, I think in Edinburgh, I did 6 like original songs and in between lots of jokes, stream of consciousness, reading some poems. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely planned, but every night was a little bit different.
Yeah.
And I just got so like doing it there. I'd never done it so many times before I did Edinburgh. I'd only done it, I think twice in a row, maybe 3 times. So to do it 28 or whatever the fuck it was, I just got so, I felt so powerful. I got so good at it and I felt so in my fucking element. And then, yeah, I took like 2 weeks off afterwards. And then my first show back, I was like, fuck, I'm rusty. It was such an amazing feeling to like, just go for it.
Because what you're doing is like you're dressed in this kind of shimmering gold outfit. Like it's proper kind of pro cabaret aesthetic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even like there's jokes in between the songs, but the songs, they're not just funny songs. They're like, they're as funny as a proper comic bit.
That's
like,
right.
A premise and a journey. And then in between, it's almost like in the breaths, you're doing little kind of like the, you know, popping your leg out. And do you know what I mean? It's like in the breaths between the songs, it's like punch, punch, punch. It's a proper machine gun of all of this stuff, which is all suffused with the character.
Yeah, I really don't. Like even repeating a chorus can feel boring. I'm like, how am I going to make this next chorus like different? Or how am I going to add another joke? Because I want a laugh. Like I'm okay with like the first few lines kind of establishing what I'm talking about. But then I want to laugh like every new thought is kind of the goal. I actually just wrote. So I've been writing a few new songs and I had one I've been doing. And I was like, what's it missing? And it was missing that kind of like, so I added a bridge where I kind of go off for a while.
And by the brrr, you mean the kind of machine gun joke?
Yeah, bridge. Yeah, like new thought, like overshare, What'd she just say? That has nothing to do, especially like that has nothing to do with what we just heard about. But then we kind of loop it back together.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that kind of interests
me. And the, we were talking before about the kind of thirst for live audiences. It seems to me like I can see how you would how you would change gear during the pandemic and go, right, let's work on the songs, because they're, you know, you're writing, like, that's a technical thing you can write away from a crowd.
Yeah.
But it feels like the majority of everything that you're doing on stage is kind of created in front of a live audience. Like, rather than you're not sitting down and writing asides so much as constantly being live and remembering the best improvisations is my
theory. That's pretty spot on, because back in New York, I do a show every week at Alan Cummings Club Wednesday night. That's why I chose Wednesday nights to go live on Instagram. So every week for the past like 2 years, I, you know, host a show that goes like 2 hours. And basically the only thing I have prepared is the songs, and in between it's just riffing. And so, yeah, like a lot of times I'll remember things I said during that and then put it in the live show. I rarely sit and like write down jokes. Sometimes I'll say tweets, and that's like that's as close as I get to being like, I'm writing stand up right now.
Okay.
You know,
and the persona that it all comes from as well is so kind of fresh, because you're, what I love about it, or one of the, can you tell I enjoyed the show? One of the things I loved about it is that you are sending up a thing whilst also kind of being the thing. Like you just get to have your cake and eat it, because you're kind of mocking that kind of needy millennial Instagram celebrity focused, you know, I'm a content. I mean, was there a moment when you burped and then said, what's the line?
I
can't stop creating content. And it's like you're mocking the thing whilst doing the thing. You're producing really good Instagram friendly millennial content.
Yeah. I always joke that I love making fun of stuff that I really love. So that's kind of the whole thing. I mean, even like being like, I'm like a little princess right now in a cabin in the woods and I'm complaining about it. And that's like what the songs are about. And I think it's like, I tweeted something about the pandemic. I was like, I can't believe this is happening to me. And so someone retweeted it and was like, oh my God, classic millennial bullshit. And I'm like, I know, like I'm joking, but I also feel that way.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And where did you come from as a comic?
I know. Who made you?
because you seem so, like, I've been able to do much less research on you than I ordinarily would, because, you know, parenting in the pandemic.
Of course.
So I like to really know who someone is. But with you, I'm like, okay, so you dropped into Edinburgh fully formed. And tone, which is like, oh, she could have been going 10 years. But I've got no idea what your background is or how you put this version of yourself together.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up doing like musical theater. I'm from Houston. And then when I was in college, there was this group called Baby Wants Candy. They do musical improv at the Fringe. And they were like, we're looking for like interns to come and like help flyer for us, essentially. So they take students from like American colleges and just bring them over. And they say, you know, we'll pay. I guess they pay for the flat and they pay for like some of the stuff. And then you just get yourself over there. So I was like, fuck, that sounds amazing. I never even really heard of the Fringe. So the summer after I graduated, so I was like, I think I turned 22 when I was there. I was just flyering at the Fringe and I was like, this is the best place I've ever been. I'm obsessed. I wasn't even doing comedy yet, but I was like, I know I have to come back here. I just don't know how. And then I moved to New York right after. I started doing like improv stuff at the UCB and then like sketch and then stand up. And then just kind of through like the New York scene, kind of, I miss singing because I used to do that all the time in my theater stuff. So I kind of strung that together with the stand up and then met my piano player and collaborator, Henry Kaperski, and we started writing songs together, and that's when everything clicked. And then we started doing like my solo show in New York, and then I was like, oh, this is perfect for the Fringe. And it just was like a no-brainer. So then after like about like a year of doing that kind of regularly, a year or two, I guess. Yeah. Like probably I would say about 2 years of kind of regularly doing like workshopping an hour monthly, touring a bit in the States, just doing like LA and New York and Chicago. I was like, this is definitely ready. I'm excited. And I was friends with Lolly Adefope because I had met her the first time I went over. So she was like super instrumental. She was like, you have to do the Fringe, because she'd seen my act in New York. And so she was like, what you need to do is come to London. So about a year or about 2 years ago. Wait, what year is it? I guess.
Yeah, I know, right?
Anyways, so the fall before I did The Fringe, yeah, she was like, come to London, and she helped me set up a show at Moth Club. And so I did my show at Moth Club, and she invited like Burke's Nest people, and I guess some other production people came. And that's how I got hooked up with Burke's Nest, and I met some of them. And then, yeah, it just happened really organically. They were like, we want to bring the show over. I was like, fuck yeah, let's do it. And I went to London in the spring, and I had Owen from Burke's Nest. We were having like lunch, and he was like telling me about the awards and stuff. And I was like, I'm going to win the award. And he was like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's not about the awards. Like, fuck. And I was like, okay, but I'm going to win it. And then I did the show. It was fucking insane. And then right before we were walking to the ceremony, I was with Owen, and I was like, will you hold my jacket when I win? And he was like, shut the fuck up. And then I was like,
oh, man. There's so many. There's a lot of things I want to ask there. Chiefly, I suppose, do you have a sense, because that's such a unique thing to have that sense of like most people, I guess, would be kind of so into the idea of winning that they wouldn't want to hex it in some insane way that isn't real. But like, to what extent is like was the award meaningful to you, and you're just impervious to that kind of cringy thinking? Or is it that it didn't matter because you're an American and you can just bodge over to the UK? Who cares?
No, it definitely meant something. I definitely like thought it would be really fucking cool to get it. I think, I don't know, I just had this insane confidence about it. I was like, I just knew it was such a perfect fit for like what The Fringe is, and like what, especially, yeah. And then once I had done it in London too, I was like, oh, I'm vibing so well with this crowd. I just been working on it for so long. I was like, this is really fucking good. And I think it's the best.
Yeah. And it turned out it was the best. It's interesting, yeah. That, oh, go on, sorry.
No, I don't know. I think there's also a part of it of being like an outsider. Stakes just feel lower. Like, I was even thinking, if I had come up in the UK scene and I had to go through, because no one reviews shows in the States like they do in the UK. Like, if I had to go through like the horrifying process of like getting a bad review and stuff, that would be hell. Like, I don't think I could handle that. So being kind of an outsider, being like, okay, well, you know, whatever happens, like, I can go back to my scene. I do think that definitely is part of it. Like, feeling like I'm going to pop in, kill it, and peace out. And if that doesn't work out, then no one will care.
Yeah. Okay. And when you say you felt like it was the right sort of thing that could win it, as an outsider to The Fringe, albeit someone who has kind of grown up there to a certain extent, you know, I love that. I love that kind of intake whereby people go up and have their minds blown. That happened to me years and years ago. Whoa, Jesus, I'm going to come here forever. I love it. So from that kind of insider outsider perspective, what was it about you and what you do that made you think this ticks the right boxes? What are those boxes as you see them?
I guess I just felt like The Fringe values like innovative stuff and stuff that's, you know, a little bit off and stuff that's really theatrical and kind of over the top and surprising. And so much of the comedy in New York is just like deadpan standing and talking. And I, you know, even the fact that I do songs is like kind of weird and stuff. I don't know. It just seems like you guys really just value live performance as opposed to like just writing or something like that. Like, okay. I feel like, okay, in New York and stuff, like a lot of people just do stand up so that they can get a TV writing job. And I feel like in the UK, people do stand up because they want to do stand up and then they can make actual livings doing it, where you can't really, unless you're like a touring comic or something in the States. It's just a different,
okay,
vibe.
So this is Catherine. What a fantastic performer. She's so assured, and as we will go on to discover, also freaks out at absolutely everything. So we will get a little bit deeper into that later, but really, really appreciate her coming on the show, particularly from the perspective of, you know, being in whatever we were at the time, week 8, 9 of lockdown and the ensuing difficulties with that. I will talk to you a bit more after the show. Suffice to say now, you can follow her on all the social stuff. You can follow me on all the social stuff at ComComPod. And also, if you are interested in checking out The Infinite Sofa, hopefully Catherine is going to come along and do a set for us there in not too long a time. You can find out everything you need to know about my new online chat show, which is Mondays and Thursdays at 9 p.m. BST, served up via Twitch. You can find out everything you need to know about that at infinitesofa.com. I'm pressing pause on the business lunches for the moment because I am at capacity with them and in my actual working life and sort of on every level. I've only just taken the decision a few days ago not to start another new project because I think I'm just going to sort of settle for a bit. I've got some really good guests coming up, some good people in the frame for the next few ComComs. We are not doing them live at the moment. We were doing them kind of over Twitch, but I felt that the conversation lost more from the sense of it being slightly performed, or slightly observed at least, than it gained in being available to people. I may go back on that decision. I may change my mind on that, as is my right. Okay, that's everything for now, I think, that I need to tell you about. You can join the Insiders Club. There's no extra content from this episode, but if now is the time you are so moved, please go to comedianscomedian.com/insiders to get extras from loads of fantastic recent shows with people like Helen Zaltzman, Brett Goldstein, Alonzo Bodden, Robbie Collins, and I said Bodden. I managed to go through the whole of the episode with Alonzo Bodden, pronouncing it Bodden, even though it has two Ds, but I did say Bodden. Apologies to Alonzo. That's it for now. Let's get back to Catherine Cohen.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
So it sounds from your kind of potted history, from the backstory, that everything fell into place in the right order. Were there kind of misfires and failures along the way? Did you try things that didn't work? Or does everything you touch turn to gold?
I think the fucking misfires right now are I'm sequestered away from my adoring crowds and I'm absolutely lonely and depressed as fuck. No, I feel like obviously I've written songs that aren't, that I now think are horrible, but isn't that always the case? Like, even like doing this poetry book now, like some of the poems some of the poems I wrote literally in like 2015 and I read them and I'm like, oh, that is so stupid. So I think that's,
Can you give us an example of a thing that you wouldn't have written now or a thing you'd have edited now that's still in there?
I think there's one joke in one of my poems that was going to be in the book about like making fun of podcasts. And it's funny because now doing my podcast is a huge part of my life and I would never make fun of that in the way that I did. Or also like I had a song that was literally just called Shit in the Street about like you need to kick back and take a shit in the street. And it's like, that's so not interesting to me anymore. Like, I guess that was funny then, but I'm like, now I'm like, who cares? I guess also because the stuff I do is so personal, I'm like, anyone could write a song called Shit in the Street, but only I can write about the time, you know, I made a bad joke to a gynecologist and she didn't laugh at me and I wanted to kill myself.
Yeah. Okay.
And I can tell like what that joke is and how it unfolded and all that.
Okay.
In a new song I'm working on.
Well, that's interesting. I think that's a really, valuable thing to have noticed about like the specificity and the kind of the personalness of the experience. The shit in the street bit, I feel like I've seen you do that as a line, which is kind of like an intro to doing the line, write that down, which I, do you know what I mean? I think that has the write that down element of it is so imbued with you. It's such a peculiar, such a wonky kind of approach to your relationship with us.
Did I say write that down?
Yeah, you did. I think I saw it on a YouTube clip or something.
I was like,
you
mentioned that. Really good.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, that it's like a little aside of going, write that down. But it was write that down, not in the sense of, hey, comic at the back, can you make a note because I improvised something funny? But it was write that down in the sense of that's an important gem from my TED talk that you should all be making a note.
Yeah, write that down, please. But yeah, don't forget, take that to heart. That's funny.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I forgot all that.
And I just kind of, I think that's quite a good way to look at the way you work a crowd and the way you relate to a crowd. Like, who do you think we see you as?
I'm like, you guys are all in love with me. It's embarrassing. It's pathetic. Yeah, right. It's pathetic that you're here.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, exactly.
I'm like, it is so sad. And well, me and my podcast co-host Pat Regan, we always say, like, anyone who listens to this, like, if you're listening like that, we're really worried about you. Like, please, please, please go get some help. The podcast is called Seek Treatment. So like, if you listen to this, like, you need treatment, you need help.
Okay. Where did that, such a lovely, you are pathetic for loving me so much. That is such a wonderfully unique tone to strike with, like, for a foundation of a relationship with a crowd. I think that was one of the most explosive elements of the show that I saw, which is that you just set that relationship immediately and then you just commit to it for an hour of, like, a solid hour of brilliant stuff.
Aww.
And I think it's, when did you discover that flavor or that tone with an audience? Like, it's so much a part of you. Is that something that kind of you just got on stage and started performing and ended up saying stuff like that?
Yeah, I think it's just something that evolved over time. It definitely didn't start that way. When I started, it definitely was me just like trying more jokes, and I kind of was leaning into like the me being, you know, really confident thing. And that kind of evolved into like, I'm so confident and you're eating out of the palm of my hand and you're obsessed with me. And at this point you're so obsessed that like, we're all really worried. And like, are your families okay? Especially like, I'll have someone in a crowd, like I'll look over and there's a guy who just like totally is not into the show and his face is completely, I'm like, okay, stone faced. You're obsessed. I'm addicted to you. Like if he's stone faced, then I want him even more. I'm like, I will literally die for you. I'm so in love with you and the way you absolutely hate me. Like,
and that's such a great thing to have discovered, because like you must have, when you happened upon that, you must have gone, oh, I can probably use that at a tough gig crowd member for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like that energy of that is like,
there's always someone who's not feeling it.
Yeah. And how do you deal with that normally? How do you internally deal with, because you're playing such kind of high notes of absolute self-confidence, do you ever find yourself having a tough gig and having to put yourself through the I have absolute faith in myself bit when you're actually feeling shaken?
Yeah, well, I think lately I've been lucky only performing for people who have like come to see me, so it's a little bit less of that. But I'm trying to think, because I was doing, I don't know, I think the thing about my shows is like, even if half the people look like they're hating it, there's one person who's like losing their mind, loving it. So I'm like, that's all that really matters to me. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
When you were kind of discovering yourself, your persona, like I always think, you know, the way with like an opening line, mm-hmm. if you have an idea as a comic for a really funny opening line, how can you try it without opening with it? Do you know what I mean? And like, it's suddenly loaded with risk because you're like, oh, it'd be great if I could try that opening line once I know they like me and I can get a read of whether it works. Otherwise, I'm going to tank the gig because that, you know, that moment of meeting them is tricky. And I suppose when I see people who have enormous status performing, I think, well, how did you introduce how did you first go out and tell us we were pathetic for loving you?
I remember like the first time, the way I opened that show by singing hello and then saying I have an amazing voice. Like I remember the first time I did that, like at an open mic, I was just like really nervous. I was like, this is going to be so obnoxious. This is going to be so awful. But then I got a laugh. So I was like, I guess I'll keep doing it.
Okay.
But yeah, I was definitely nervous.
So in terms of your persona, is there anything that like, you must be aware of your kind of superpowers, like enormous confidence. You have an incredible, like proper singing voice. And you've got loads of fast gags and loads of, you know, hours on the clock or whatever the expression is. You've done, you know, you've done these kind of Wednesday night gigs for a long time.
What are the other things that you think you couldn't do it without? What are the other elements, the performative elements?
I don't know, my outfits.
That's a legit part of it, isn't it?
I literally don't. I mean, every now and then I'll do a show, like, not in clothes that I love, but I always feel like I'm somehow, like, joking. I'm like, I literally, like, can you believe I'm wearing jeans? I'm absolutely mortified to wear jeans to this show. I'm, like, wearing jeans, like, as a joke. I'm wearing jeans as a comment. Like, I feel most myself when I'm dressed to the nines. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Yeah, the singing voice is literally, it's being a singer is absolute hell on earth. Like, I've had vocal cord injuries and stuff, too, so I have to be really careful. And it's just, like, that's why Edinburgh was so tough, because I'd never sung that long every night, and I was just like living in fear, basically.
Mm.
So I have like lots of vocal warm-ups, and I've had last fall I hemorrhaged my vocal cord and had to have a laser seal up the bleeding blood vessel, and it was really traumatic. But you know, then I was singing again.
From singing,
actually I sneezed, and there was like a leaky blood vessel from like just so much use. The voice can sometimes get these like leaky vessels, and sometimes like a little thing like a sneeze can set it off. So I sneezed, and then I was basically out. That was November, and then I didn't do my where are you going? Okay, my boyfriend's sick of me. Joking. Bye, babe. I hurt my vocal cord, and then I guess, yeah, I was singing. It took almost 2 months before I was like doing my show again. Yeah, it was awful. So the singing is something I take really seriously, and it's like a very intense part of what I do, I think. But I think I also like to tell myself that I could do it without the songs. I would just, because I've done sets, you know, without songs and stuff.
Okay. How does that feel?
I just feel like this doing songs is so nice, because you're not waiting for a response. You're just, it's like, I'm doing a song, and if you laugh during it, I love that. But if you don't, I'm just like, oh, they're just listening, you know? And songs also, you can like do songs more than once and people want to hear them, as opposed to like, play that joke again. Like, no one cares, but everyone's like, roll over. I'm requesting that song. So I feel like safe and like at home doing the songs, and also like writing the songs just is, it's fun and exciting to me. Whereas writing jokes is kind of like, wait, what's happening?
Mm-hmm. And we kind of looked at those sort of superpower qualities that you have, what are the sorts of things that you wish you were better at?
Not freaking the fuck out every single day of my life. I wish I was better about not being anxious about my voice. And I wish, I didn't compare myself to others, but otherwise I think my act's perfect. No, I would love to, like, I don't know. No, honestly, it's like in my life, like the live stuff just feels like so sacred, and like, so I'm so sure of it. It's other stuff. It's like, I'm like writing a script right now, and that's really fucking hard for me. And it's like other things I wish I were better at. But for me, it's like, that's why this time has been so hard, because the live stuff is always like the thing I come back to, where I feel like at home and like myself and like, you know.
Tell me about the mental stuff. Tell me about freaking out every day when you are in a position as strong as yours, where you're kind of winning and high status and have not just comic talent, but like special skills and all the rest of it. What are you freaking out about?
Honestly, well, it's interesting. It's like, all of my anxiety revolves around my singing voice and like getting sick when I'm like, my biggest fears are like, I'll get sick from traveling so much and I won't be able to sing, and then I won't be able to do the show. Or like, oh, I'll hemorrhage my vocal cord again and won't be able to do the show. It's all just like, once I get on stage, I'm like, it's done. It's perfect. I'm in heaven. Like, from the second I start singing, from the second I walk on stage, it's on. It's just the before. And I think, but I don't know, because it's funny too, because I thought I was like, doing Edinburgh will be this kind of like test. Like, okay, look, you can do your show every night for a month and it's fine. But then like 2 months after that, I hurt my voice. So I'm like, there's just some things you can't control. And that's what's so infuriating.
And is that a sort of a healthy, logical approach to a vulnerable part of the gig? You know, the fact that you could wreck your voice.
No, or is it, I mean, such a hypochondriac.
It sounds like kind of so compulsive, exhausting. Right?
It's absolutely compulsive. And I'm like, obviously in therapy and all that, but it's like, Yeah, I'm just a total hypochondriac and just the kind of thing who, you know, you get something good and I'm just like, it's not enough. What's the next thing? Is kind of how I feel.
Yeah, there's a bit of that in comedy, eh?
Yeah, I mean, it's and especially it's interesting now, like lately, now that everything exists online, I find myself comparing myself even more or feeling more because I have all this time. Just look, what is everyone else doing? What is everyone else doing? And I'm like, I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing, I got to write this. I got to do that. I got to do that. And it's like, chill, girl. Like, you got to just do stuff when it comes and then spend the rest of the time absorbing the world around you.
Yeah, in order to, I mean, that's part of the job, right? Like, you can't just create like, content. You have to actually have input.
Right, like ideas, like every now and then you'll have an idea, but I don't try and like force an idea if it's not coming. It doesn't work like that.
Okay. And do you find that aspect, you said you're writing stuff at the moment. Is that...
Yeah.
Like, do you... Obviously, it's a different creative process when you're sitting writing. Sorry to have reminded you of it.
I know. Well, I'm co-writing. I'm developing like a scripted show for myself to star in. And I have these two co-writers who are brilliant. And it's just so different. Like, it's also like there's no instant gratification. Like, we're working on such a long-term thing. We've been working on it for, you know, over a year at this point. Mm. And like,
this is, sorry, a star vehicle for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay.
But like, we haven't even like sold it yet. And we haven't even like, obviously we haven't shot anything. So it's like, it's so... To do something that's so long-term, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, it's just hard. I'm like, I want that rush. I want that gratification of everything I've worked for. But it's like, it'll come. It'll come. I have to be patient.
And what's that? What's the kind of end game with that, or the mid game even, of doing that? Is it that you want to grow your audience so you can do monster live shows? Or like, what's your kind of dream gig? Because the cabaret style thing you do... is like, what's your ideal room size to do that in?
Oh yeah, it's like, I don't even like, I just want to do kind of what I'm already doing, just like more places, maybe some bigger venues, but I want to be acting more and I want to be a movie star is what I always say. So I want to be a movie star and then we'll see what then, and just keep doing the live stuff simultaneously wherever feels right.
And can I ask why
I only want to do it places that I want to go, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, fuck going random ass places I don't want to be.
yeah, fair days. Can I ask why you want to be a movie star? I mean, I don't know, that seems like a preposterous question, but like, what is it?
What a rush. Well, I really love acting. It's like, it's how I got into all this stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah, I want to, also like movie star implies like creative control and, mm-hmm. you know, deciding other cool people I want to work with and making stuff with my friends and you know what, that's the dream, right? So,
and is there a way to be like, could you see yourself, how, okay, here's the question, do you ever settle for anything? You seem like a non-settler, right?
I know, it's actually disgusting. I've actually realized it was really disgusting over the past year to realize I had like some artistic integrity. I was like, there were two opportunities that came up that like, you know, 5 years ago, I would have been like, of course I'm doing that. And I was just like, I can't do that.
Because
it's not me. But I was like, fuck. It was like, especially it was things that like, you know, could have been a lot of money potentially too. And just like security, like anytime there's a job, it's like any kind of security, it's like, oh, security and money. And it's, but it's like, this is not kind of the thing I'm working towards. Yeah.
Can you, I obviously don't want to name what the things are, but can you just tell me a bit more about the reason why they didn't fit what it is you're working towards?
Well, I think it was more like I've, you know, been working on this, like I have this specific point of view and these things I want to talk about and these things that are important to me. And so I want to be working on stuff that aligns with that.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Like, it's also like, if I don't, you know, I don't want to be involved with something that if I wouldn't feel proud, like posting like, hey guys, go check this out or come see me in this or whatever. Yeah. Then like, you know, if I'm not excited about doing that, then or if I'm embarrassed at all, like what's the point? You know, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. Who knows? Now I'm like, fuck, I should have done whatever the fuck. Cause now I'm alone in this house dying.
And do you have, how are you coping with social media during the pandemic and broadly? Cause you seem very, like you're very into it. You're very engaged on Instagram. you produce content. It seems like the right kind of platform for you. Are you on TikTok as well? Is that like?
No, I'm not. Maybe I'll get on TikTok. I kind of thought that'd be fun at some point. I always been beating myself up for not doing it enough. Like, oh, you fucking idiot. You don't have an idea for a viral video today. Like, you know, it's hard. Like, it's so much comparing. So I'm trying now. I really, when I'm working and stuff, I don't look at Insta stories. I barely look at Instagram. I just post and then like engage with some of my comments and get off.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get back to that because lately I've been like just scrolling. So, but yeah, I think the best thing is like I go make something, I post it, I get that rush of likes, I engage with people who like it, and then I like don't look too much at other stuff because it just drives me nuts.
It is insane, isn't it? That like there's this incredible platform for getting your stuff out there, but in order to use it, you've got to step through, you've got to walk through this tunnel of things that are designed by scientists in a lab to distract you and make you envious. Do you know what I mean?
It's like, it's really tough too. It just makes you envious of things you don't even want. It's what's so scary.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be anyone else, but I look at someone's thing and I'm like, I want that. I want to do an ad for that cool dress brand I like and go run around a mansion or whatever the fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's tricky.
So when you're, do you have any kind of strategies for dealing with some of the more anxious parts of your personality or parts of your job?
I mean, I like, how do I deal with it? I mean, I guess like write about it, journaling, jogging sometimes.
I've never journaled. Is journaling effect? That's quite an American term. Is that basically just keeping
journaled?
A diary? Yeah, I don't think I've ever journaled.
Yeah. Oh my God. Such a huge part of my life and everyone's life, I feel. Yeah. Well, you know the book, The Artist's Way.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the main tenets of The Artist's Way is to do your morning pages, which is 3 pages of stream of consciousness journaling every day. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have adopted that. I don't do it every day, but I try and do it whenever I'm thinking of it. I definitely did it like during Edinburgh. This was my notebook. And then I did it like I've been doing it lately, but when it's easier when I'm like traveling and I'm alone to do it, you know, but sometimes it's so boring. Sometimes it's just like, I'm stupid. I'm fat, blah, blah, blah. Eek, eek, help, help. I want to eat something.
Is that helpful?
You can quote me.
That last bit?
No.
is that the intention of The Artist's Way to kind of condemn yourself?
I don't know what's helpful. I know. My therapist says to be kind to myself. I'm like, that's so boring. How do I do that?
tell me about that. Why is it boring to be kind to yourself?
I don't know. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, treat yourself like the little child version of you. I'm like, I don't have kids. I don't know like how to relate to kids. How can I relate to the child version of myself?
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. Like, is that like, I suppose you, in some ways you're fulfilling for me the idea of like, given how strong the stuff is it's kind of like, your performance, the jokes or the rest of it. It's almost like when you see someone doing ballet and you think, my God, look at that skill. And then you go, how did you get that? Oh, you kind of beat yourself into the ground on point. Or, you know, a circus performer, Jackie Chan, and you go, oh, they literally hit you with sticks in the Beijing Opera until you were good enough. Is there part of that in your
practice?
Yeah,
I mean, I've always been really hard on myself. So, like, I was, like, obsessed with doing very well in school, and then I was obsessed. And now I'm obsessed with this. I just really want to be really successful.
And I suppose I've spoken to some people on this podcast who are annoyed by that, and others who are like, well, I benefit from this. Do you know what I mean? So I won't try and heal it.
I just can't imagine being any other way. I definitely think I could be. I definitely am trying to be a little more zen and accepting of things I can't control, but it's difficult. Yeah.
Are there any shortcuts to doing what you do that you could tell to a younger version of yourself?
Oh, that's such a great question. No, I think it's just what I would tell anyone, like, just do the stuff that like makes you laugh, that you actually feel connected to, that you actually think is funny, and don't try and like copy someone else. And don't be embarrassed. Like, I was so embarrassed to start doing songs and stuff. I was like, oh, it's kind of embarrassing. Like, it's not cool. Like, my work is so like expressive and emotional, and I felt like that wasn't really cool when I was doing, when I started doing stand up. It was cool to be like, so I met this guy. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, I see what you mean. Okay. So you feel the.
But I don't know. I know there's no shortcuts. That's what's so annoying about life. It's like you have to just like get there, and yeah, I'm not where I want to be yet. So I'm, you know, I'm in the trenches again.
What? Oh man, I'm just thinking of the trenches and the pandemic and the fact that you had you had an incredibly glittering year lined up. Like, I mean, I'm missing out on some joyous festivals. I was looking forward to going back to Edinburgh. I got a show I'm really proud of. It's got my best. The most frustrating thing is it's got my best poster image ever. And it's still mine. I haven't let it out there.
Can you use it?
I can still use it. But it's like, I was so looking forward to it, you know?
I know. I'm just telling myself, like, everything that was going to happen will happen. Like, it'll happen. Yeah. I don't know when. But it'll happen. So in the meantime, I'm just like, facing some of these demons while I wait, and then seeing, you know, yeah, what that does to me. We'll see. I was really burnt out too. Like right before when I came home from London, I was so fucking exhausted from all the traveling. I was like, I have to, like, I was so excited to just like chill for a week. And then after a week, I was like, oh fuck.
I think I relate to that. I heard about, I read The 4-Hour Work Week a few years ago. I don't know if you've read that.
So what's that all about?
Well, it's kind of, it's about the pursuit of only doing things that you enjoy, so that your work week is like, you don't count any hours spent doing things that you enjoy. So you only need to do 4 hours of boring admin or whatever a week, because everything else isn't work because you love it. So it's kind of about designing your life. And it's also, there's a bit, it's kind of in tandem, I suppose, with the, whatever it is, like, is it FIRE, financially independent, retire early or something? You know, it's one of those kind of like, you're the designer of your own life. And if you can create a business online that makes you money while you sleep, then you can free yourself from the world. Like
it's interesting. I feel like so much of my work sometimes is like just emailing, and I'm just like, fuck this.
Yeah, so
I'm trying to get better about like not beating myself up if I don't respond to something quickly, or like if I don't respond to something at all. I'm like, that's okay. Like, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. Like,
yes.
I used to get so angry when people wouldn't respond to me. I'd be like, that person's such a dick. They're such an asshole. Fuck them. And now I'm like, oh, they're just busy. And like, you know, it's not a personal thing if someone ignores. I mean, it depends on what it is, but I feel like in general, you know, you can't do everything.
Yeah. I suppose the point I was going to make was having read that book and thought, oh, great, that would be great, because I'd have loads of free time if I could just design my life such that I wasn't constantly doing stuff. And then whenever I free up a gap, I'm like, I immediately start freaking out going, oh, no, but I, you know, and you sort of look at your life the other way around and go, oh, no, there is a reason I'm always busy. It's because I crave being busy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that wasn't really a question. That was a more sort of an observation.
No, I just kind of like got lost in thought about like, yeah, what that means. I love being busy. It's tough.
Oh, I feel like I've got you at a really tough time. Like, obviously there's a global pandemic on, but I feel like this is particularly difficult for your psyche and for your performic rhythm.
Yeah, I think just like the past like 2 weeks, I'm like, okay, what the fuck's going on? You know what I mean? It's funny. I'm like, I don't think it's a particularly tough time. I think I'm kind of always.
Oh, this is.
But
you.
Okay. Yeah, no, this is. Yeah, this sucks, but I have to just like stay positive. Like, it's gonna be okay.
Okay. A couple of quick fire things to wrap up with. Are you considered a success among the friends you grew up with?
Oh, Probably, but I don't consider myself enough of a success yet, so I don't really care.
That's interesting. I mean, that's like a winner and a loser.
I just so don't give a shit. I'm just like, if someone else tells you you're great, you're like, so what? Like, I have to believe it.
That's fascinating that that's like the core of your incredible don't give a shitness. Is what you don't give a shit about is other people's perception because you're busy giving yourself a hard time. Is that
exactly? I'm trying to be kinder to myself. And yeah, definitely. No, and like when I, don't get me wrong, like when I step back and I look at what I've accomplished, I'm like so proud of myself and I feel so fucking good. I even like a few months ago, I was like on a plane board and I like made a list of kind of everything I'd done artistically that I was proud of and like a timeline of it just so I could step back and be like, wow, like, this is so amazing. Like, you should be so proud of yourself. So I definitely am and I'm definitely conceited and think I'm like a genius and whatever. But I just, there's so much that I want to do that I haven't done yet that I'm like, let's fucking go.
Yes. Yes. Do you recognize anything stereotypical in yourself? Like a stereotypical artist or, do you know what I mean? Is there anything where you're like, oh God, I suppose I'm living out that thing that everyone does.
In some ways I feel that because I've always been extremely emotional and I have insane mood swings and I can be very like dramatic, but I never fully connected to the artist trope because I'm not at all flaky. I'm like very type A. I'm very like responsible and on my shit. You know, I was never like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to call you. I was in Paris, like at a dance. Like I was, you know, I was like, that's not my vibe. I'm like, hey, so we're meeting on the 17th from 4 to 6. Like, here's the Zoom link. Like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So I definitely don't romanticize that. I wish I could be more like a romantic, like, and I was just like stumbling across the street and I met this guy and like, now we're collaborating on a noise album. It's like, that's not my life.
is there an act out there who you dislike, who you secretly worry that you are a bit like?
Oh, that I dislike. I think in general, like so much musical comedy is so corny and bad that at the beginning I was scared of doing it. I was like, I don't want to be like that. I can't think of a specific act, but I think just in general, like the idea of like hitting a single joke in a song and then just beating it to death, like that's not interesting to me. So I wouldn't ever want to do that.
Are there ever kind of tropes or types of joke you feel yourself repeating? Do you ever kind of go like, oh, I was about to do that? And I'm like, no, I've done that joke before. In a different...
Yeah, I mean, all the time, I'm just like, j'adore, j'adou, j'ada. It's like, it's absolute nonsense. I just sputter nonsense. Or I'm like, maybe I won't do... Like, I have a song called Upstate about running to upstate New York to run from your problems. And I have another song called By the Sea about being a woman who wants to be like by the sea to deal with her ailments. And I was like, I can't put those in the same... Or if I'm going to put those in the same show, I should spread them out. You know, that's too, yeah, that is okay. Very similar. Okay. So, but honestly, usually it's someone else, like my manager being like, that's really similar. You shouldn't do that. And I was like, I want to, I think it's different. And she's like, okay, whatever.
With something like By the Sea, a song about a woman who wants to be by the sea with her ailments.
Yeah.
Like that is such a fucking great premise for a song. Do you know what I mean? Like, like the, I don't even know what it is. The nussness of that. You know, like that's so you. It's so kind of, do you know what I mean?
it's a very specific memory I have of seeing the Jane Eyre musical and seeing like the crazy mother in the attic or whatever. And I was like, and that kind of like that kind of song, that kind of like dirgy, like whatever. And I was like, I want it to be like that. And I just, before quarantine, I used to romanticize going, you know, into the country to work on my art. And now I'm like, but, yeah.
What commonly held belief about comedy do you disagree? What sort of thing do you hear people say about comedy that you always think bullshit?
I don't know. You have to like comedy to do it. I'm like, I hate comedy. there's just so many shows I go to where I'm like, kill me. Or I just also like, I wasn't a comedy nerd growing up. Like there's so much I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't think it's necessarily, I don't think you need to know everything before you start doing your own thing. I don't know. Maybe that's not true.
And just, this is like the opposite of that really, but it's just occurred to me when you're doing the Alan Cumming show on a Wednesday, how did you, like you're hosting that show. So did you progress through the ranks? Did you start, you know, turning up and doing bits and then gradually get asked to host the show?
No. I knew I wanted to host a weekly show with all my friends. And Henry, my piano player, had played a gig at the club. And he was like, there's a new spot. Alan Cummings opening this new club. So we just emailed and we're like, can we have a night? And he was like, yeah. And then it went so well that we're like, can we do every week? And he was like, yeah. And so Daniel Nardiccio, the guy who owns the club with Alan, just like trusted us and just gave us this amazing gift and like let us just do whatever we wanted. And that's how the whole thing took off. So I'm just endlessly grateful for them.
And when you just, because I'm doing like an online chat show, effective chat and variety comedy show.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm very new, like 14 episodes in, and I'm programming it. And I love it because I get to be Kermit in my own Muppet show, right? I get to go, stuff that I love. So what have you got? This is a sort of a kind of, what's the phrase? This is a kind of particular personal interest to me. Have you got any advice for people putting together a lineup or like, what have you learned from doing that? Because I'm completely new to it. I love it, but I'm aware that I'm new to it. And I'm kind of often going, oh, how does that fit together?
Yeah, I think that's why I wanted to do it so bad at the beginning, because I knew all these interesting, amazing people. And I just wanted, it was like, I wanted to feel like a party too. I wanted to be like, who do I want to hang out with tonight? Like, let's have them come to the show. Oh, like, especially like in New York, if I haven't seen a friend in a while and they text me, I'm like, hey, do you want to come to the show this week? Even if like, even if they're just like a singer or something, I'm just like, just come sing something, like whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just be near people you want to hang out with. I think sometimes it even hurts me because I'm like, oh, should I be trying to get like bigger acts or whatever on the show? But that doesn't really interest me. I'm like, I don't really care. But now I have my friend Lauren Mandel helps me produce the show because I can't do it all on my own. So she will sometimes get bigger acts, and that's always, you know, a nice way to meet new people. And yeah, but it's been really cool. Like doing Edinburgh was amazing because I met so many amazing comedians who I wouldn't have known just being in New York. So now, like, I had Chris Parker, who's in New Zealand. He came and did my Instagram show last week. And everyone was like, oh my God, who was that? He was so amazing.
Yeah, great.
He's a genius. I was like, I know. And because when I saw his Edinburgh show, I was like, holy shit, this guy is so, so funny. So my vibe. So it's cool. Like, I can't wait to be back at it again. And it's fun, like, doing the show in New York, because then anytime anyone would come over from the UK or whatever, I'd be like, give them my info, you know, tell them to come do my thing. Yeah, so it became this whole...
Yes.
Thanks.
So, finally, what's the most enjoyable moment of your show? Like, as an individual moment, not the tone. The
For
kind
me?
Of, yeah. Yeah, what's like almost like the bit or the joke or the line or the song where you most feel like, this is, I'm in the zone?
I would say, well, usually it's whatever is newest. Like, whenever I'm doing something new and I'm, like, really having to be in that moment. But, when I do the last song in my Edinburgh show, like right before that last moment, and I'm just like, I could feel that I have like, and I'm like just feeling the music and I can feel the crowd and I know it's about to end. That's the best part when it's over.
That's beautiful. Thanks so much, Kat. So that was Catherine. Fantastic to talk to her. Really exciting conversation, and I hope that she continues to deal well with kind of funneling her anxieties through her work in the way that is currently serving her very well. And I think she's just such a devastating performer, such a powerhouse of a performer. So do please try and go and see her when the world returns to normal, some aspects of which I'm looking forward to. That's everything from Catherine. Remember, Kat C. Cohen on Instagram and Kat Cohen on Twitter. You can follow me at ComComPod or at Stu Goldsmith on Twitter and Instagram, and at ComComPod on Instagram. If you are interested in the new podcast that myself and Sindhu V are doing, it's called Child Labour, and it's a parenting podcast. Myself and Sindhu V, the first episode went out a few days ago with Arabella Weir, and you can find out everything you need to know about that. Look, I've knocked up the world's worst webpage. It's at childlabourpod.com, labour with the UK spelling L-A-B-O-U-R. Childlabourpod.com. It's an absolute... It's a dog end of a web page, but it does contain easily clickable one button links to subscribe to it on a variety of platforms. And I think at the moment we'll have to settle for that. You can also, because it comes from Global Radio, you can subscribe on the Global Player, which I'm sure is every bit as delightful and expansive
as we might imagine it is. So find out all about that at childlabourpod.com or by searching for Child Labour Podcast all over the place. That's it for now. I will post-amble at you in just a moment, but for now, that concludes the podcast. So in place, really, of a post-amble this week, I just want to take this opportunity to ask you, the white person listening to this, particularly if you're a comedian or a creative, and or if you have a platform to talk to people, not to do as I have done and sit there regarding social media as simply entertainment and kind of holding yourself aloof through some sort of combination of inertia and not wanting to appear performative and not wanting to invite criticism and not wanting to be uncomfortable, not needing to use it as a platform at all, really, which is no doubt because you, like me, already have a privileged place in society. Why would I need the outlet of a platform when I'm constantly validated by the world anyway? But instead, to recognise that silence is violence, that our white silence is violence, and instead to consider using your platform, whatever it is, to amplify black and minority ethnic voices at this specific time of unrest and constantly in this continuing context of enormous racial inequality. I will try harder. I hope you will too. There are loads of incredible black and minority ethnic comics that you should be following on Twitter. I will put all their Twitter handles in the show notes. A few off the top of my head: Dane Baptiste, Ninia Benjamin, Fumbi Omoteo, Gina Yashere, Desiree Burke, Jamali Maddox, Ola the Comedian, Ahir Shah, Tez Ilyas, Paul Sinner, Nish Kumar, Deliso Chaponda, Athena Kuglenu, and many, many more besides. I will put all of their Twitter handles in the show notes of this episode. But please, let's try to be better. Let's try not to be so cringing about the uncomfortableness and the extremely relative, in inverted commas, dangers of posting and inviting argument and criticism and those kind of things. All those things that often stop me tweeting about anything because people on the internet can be so shit. But to overcome that, to attempt to sit with that uncomfortable feeling and at the very least to just amplify the voices of people who are doing the work. Let's all do that. Thank you.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.